Welcome to Recovery Stories, Yukon and BC. This podcast aims to create a space for healing, understanding, and connection. Peter A. joins us. Peter is 46 years old. He's from Victoria, BC, and is currently living in Whitehorse, Yukon. Welcome, Peter. Please start your story anywhere that you'd like.
So I'm very new again. This is day 19 after 13 years, back to day 19. And one day at a time, of course. I can remember the first time I tasted alcohol. And of course, I loved it. I grew up on sailboats, sailing around the Vancouver Island and all the beautiful little spots all over there, and in my little dinghy crabbing, and it was beautiful, such a blessed childhood. And there was this one time where my dad's a sailor guy, like sailing is his passion. I can remember this time when I was sailing my little dinghy. It's called a Laser. It's a tiny little sailing dinghy, very fast. It's an Olympic a boat as well, and my dad wanted me to be an Olympic Laser sailor. So we'd be sailing, and I'd have the dinghy, and I'd be following the big boat. That was what we did. And this one time, the wind and the waves and the weather and the current, perfect storm, and oh, my dad was worried, and I handled it somehow. I got through this crazy weather in this tiny little dinghy. And I've never seen my dad so proud of me and really see me. And so there was this moment where we got into the anchorage and my parents gave me a nice big beer. Here's your reward. We're so proud of you. That's the one time I felt like a man in front of my father. And that moment when the booze hit, I just felt the best I've ever felt in my whole life. Probably 7 or 8 years old. Mm. Yeah. And maybe I've been chasing that moment. So I loved it right from the very first taste. It really blew up at age 30. This is where my recovery journey really started, because I met a girl and we had a child. And I had to start hiding that behavior. Yeah, it was really a really unhealthy situation. I know that geographical cures do not work, but I also know that staying in the same place with the same patterns and the same people, for me, is too much of a barrier. And so I ran away up here. Something called me to come north. And I flew up here as fast as I could in my little van. I call her Viento, which means wind. I had a very privileged, very sheltered childhood. I go, you know, why? Why did this addiction and brokenness come into my life so much? You know, there's, on the outside, it looks like I would just be this happy little sheltered boy that has everything he needs, but I think the thing about addiction is that no matter where you come from or who you are or how good your life was, it doesn't discriminate. So in a way, it unites us in recovery. My mother, she was a very nurturing, loving woman, and she did drink, but I never saw alcoholism in our home. My father barely ever drank. He was just a workaholic, not around very much. And our connection as men, as father and son, is not what I need. I need so much more connection. And so much of my insecurity as a man comes from being that sensitive little boy that felt like I wasn't a man because my son just wants to do art and sew and garden and with his mom and do all these things that were in the early 90s, or sorry, the early 80s, seen as feminine, too feminine. And I felt like I wasn't man enough. And so it was that insecurity in my manhood and lack of connection to my father that exacerbated the need or accentuated the need for some sort of comfort and validation. You know, when I drink, I can feel that cliche of 10 feet tall and bulletproof, as they say. As a child, I did not learn to regulate my nervous system. And little tiny things, such as someone laughing at me, would send me into a fight or flight sympathetic nervous system response. And I don't want to get too sidetracked on the breathing, because that's a big passion of mine. I can talk about it all day, but I was a mouth breather because my nose didn't work. I was born with an umbilical cord around my neck, and I almost died at birth, the blue baby. And so my nose, my breathing was dysfunctional right from my infancy. And when we breathe through our mouth all the time, we don't develop a healthy nervous system, because breathing through the mouth is fight or flight, emergency. We're meant to breathe through our nose, and there's all kinds of physiological things that happen in the body as a result of nose breathing. And so I did a lot of damage to myself through that, and I think that's part of my story. I don't think that's the reason, but through breathing, nose breathing, long, slow, deep breathing, using the diaphragm, has really, really made a noticeable difference in my ability to show up in the world and not be so scared. I have a daughter who is 15, and she is no longer in my life anymore. And that keeps me addicted. That the pain of losing her because of my addiction keeps me in addiction. And how do I forgive myself? I really don't know how to forgive myself. I walk around just hating myself. And it's so hard to find that self-love. And so my daughter's mother, she had to raise herself from an early age because she lost her parents through suicide and addiction. They were both in addiction. And one took his father took his life, and the mother just slowly, you know. She had to watch all that suffering, and I didn't know that when I met her. And what happened after we became pregnant was that all this stuff started to come out. Like, we met when we were partying and we had a kid, and then everything changed. And that's when I became aware of my addiction. I'd never had any issues before that. It was just these brief moments that were years apart of, oops. I think that she's going to be the end of a long line of suffering. That her little spirit is so strong that it sees any tiny little example of addiction in me, and it says, nope, you're out, you're fired. No more dad. It's all, you either be perfectly sober or you're not in my life. That little child is so strong that way. I might as well just fire straight for the bullseye on this one. The police took my daughter away from me. And the progression of that was that as a single parent, I would have a very limited amount of time to myself when my daughter's mother had her. And so I would try and cram all of that fun into a small amount of time. And that, of course, bled into when my daughter would come into my care. And I would show up hungover to care for her. And then I would show up and still be drinking. And that's when I realized this is not fun anymore. This is function or die. And I am so miserable. And I fooled myself into thinking I was fun dad. We were never sitting around doing nothing, watching TV. We were out strolling everywhere. I used to skateboard with the stroller. I'd push the stroller and I'd, you know, and she'd be having fun and people would be waving to us. And I had a six pack in the stroller. I had a tall can in the drink holder of the stroller, skating down the street, waving to people. It was fun dad. I was fun dad for a while until I was hungover. Dad needs booze in order to even do all these things with her. But we did, you know, birthday parties, play dates, the pool, the trampoline place. We did so much awesome, fun stuff. I thought I was being great. But what I didn't realize is that little soul, she could see. She could see the demon in me. And even though she was having fun, and she part of her could feel that darkness, I believe. And then the day came when I showed up to take care of her, and I'd been up all night partying, and her mother, she says, "Don't leave the house. I'm going to Vancouver with my new boyfriend. You stay here. Don't leave the house." I was crying. I was a basket case, wasted. And we went to a friend's birthday party. I stopped at the liquor store. I was drinking a Mickey, walking down the street. And the police pulled over. "Have you been drinking, sir?" I just hung my head, nodded, and that was it. Game over. So my daughter, she remembers that clear as a bell to this day. And I say, "Hun, we have to work on this. We have to talk to mom. We have to get counseling about this. We need to move on from this." But she can't seem to move on from that yet. And but that was the progression. It was right from, you know, becoming a parent and thinking I could be fun dad. And then there's so much learning there. Yeah, painful, painful learning. My mother offered treatment, and I said, "No way, I'm not going there." Little did I know what a great experience it can be. I just said, "No, I'll just go to meetings in recovery groups." So I just did that. Didn't do the work, just showed up at the meetings, put on a real good face, because I'm really good at fooling people, I thought, anyway. But 2 weeks, not even 2 weeks, of me going to meetings, and the social services folks say, "Okay, yeah, so you're good, you can go back to everything." And I thought, what? That's too easy. And so I just went right back into, like, nothing ever happened. You know, her mother was happy because, you know, she was going to school to become a nurse and working. And now all the help that I was providing, because I quit my landscape business so that I could be a full-time parent. And so now she doesn't have all that help. So she was just as eager as social services to get the file off the desk so she could have my help again. I didn't know what I was dealing with. I just still didn't think I had a problem. I just thought that I was stressed out and I got caught in a bad situation. So little did I know that my daughter was carrying such a heavy burden from that. I thought because she was 3 years old, she wouldn't really remember or notice anything. But that was such a significant trauma for her life. But I wish I had gone to treatment then. It took me years to really realize that I needed the help I do. I think, if I'm completely honest, it's taken me 13 years and driving up to Whitehorse and ending up at the Sarah Steele building to really realize step one. Yeah. I stayed up one night. You know, I was in and out of the meetings. I was going through a period where I said, nah, because there's that part, that self-hate part, and that I'll never be able to get well. I might as well just... So I was in one of those periods of being back out and giving up. And I stayed up all night watching Vikings on the History Channel and taking all the substances, the booze and then all the other harder things. And in the morning, I was so terrified that I phoned my father, and I hadn't spoken to him in a long time. And I phoned him and I said, I think I'm going to die. And he called an ambulance. He didn't come and get me. He lives down 5 minutes away. He called an ambulance. And I ended up in the, you know, in the hallway and the emerge, and the nurses were like, oh, not another one of these. And I says, where's my dad? Where's my dad? And the nurse said, he left because you were mad at him. Because I was saying, you don't love me, you know. Basket case. I ended up running out of the hospital, getting in my van, driving to Vancouver, ending up in Emerge at another hospital. And they almost restrained me to the gurney, to the stretcher or whatever it is, because I was so out of control. And that's when I finally agreed to go to treatment. I've been to Cedars at Cobble Hill, and that was a wonderful experience. I lasted 6 months sober after that. And I've been to treatment in Victoria, detox a bunch. And I love being in those environments because I connect with people so well in there. And I feel safe to do my art in there. And when it comes time to leave, I really don't want to go. Yeah, the relationships that we make in those moments, I think, are very special, because when we're broken open, when I'm broken open, my heart is just there. And when other people are going through that as well, I think there's such an intimacy.
You're 19 days in. What is really number one thing that is keeping you sober this day?
Today, it is God, 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 Creator, Great Spirit. It is this bursting in my heart of love, overjoyed, and synchronicity at all the beautiful things that are happening to me. The people that I'm meeting, I believe that my higher power has been bringing in these really clear signs that I'm on the path again and it's okay. And so just this overwhelming feeling of gratitude to be alive and to be surrounded once again, it's restored my faith. But what am I doing? So I guess having my practice of waking up, doing breath work, getting in the Yukon River, and speaking. I just do a voice recording every morning instead of writing. So that just starting my day with that structure.
Peter, when you have a relapse, you said you've been through so many, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. When that happens, how do you get out of it? Mm-hmm. And how do you mm-hmm. get back on track again?
Mm. I love that question because I like to think I've developed a bit of a system, albeit a unnecessary, repetitive system. I don't want to keep having to use it. The way I do it is I use edible cannabis so that I can sleep through the hangover. So my hangovers are so terrifying that I can't seem to transition from alcohol to... It's like, you know, I don't have... You know, they give you Valium or Ativan or various other things. I used the cannabis as a way to sleep it off. And then from there, I go to the pool and start getting physically clean, feeling like I have some self-respect and aren't just reeking and gross. And from there, from the pool, I'll go to a meeting. And if that's not available, then quite often that just turns into it's the harm reduction thing where I'll just slow down the drinking. It still continues, but I'll make excuses by sleeping for an entire day on edibles. So it's not a good system, but that's how I've gotten out.
Peter, what parting piece of guidance would you give to somebody listening right now that might be thinking about getting sober?
I would ask them, the advice that I would give is to do some really deep questioning of their life and see if they can find an answer for what they want to do with their life. What their purpose, if they have, and if they want purpose. Because I think there really needs to be a strong desire for this. I meet a lot of people that just sort of go, yeah, I think I'm going to do this. But I really think that to pursue this path, we need to be all in and have a really strong purpose in getting sober. What would life be like to really get clear? Because that's what I think I've been missing. That's been my mistake, is not getting really, really clear on why I want to get sober and what is my purpose. I think it's just been to get myself out of trouble. I didn't want to be sober. It was just like, uh-oh, this isn't working. But now I have a really strong, clear purpose in being sober.
What would you say that you're most grateful for in your sobriety today?
I am most grateful for my spirit returning to me. Calling my spirit back, feeling like I have a chance at making amends for the sin and the pain that I've caused to so many people.
Thank you for being here today, Peter, and sharing. I really appreciate your time.
And thank you so much for doing this podcast. It has been so helpful for me in those scary early days out of detox. I just lay there by the river and listen to all your episodes. And thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please reach out to our website at storiesytbc.com for supports in your area. Or if you'd like to share your story on this podcast, please email storiesytbc@gmail.com.